Good morning, everybody. It is the Friday before Columbus Day weekend, October 8th, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom Podcast. I am your host, Frank. And today we have for you the top five dumbest pop culture moments of the week. Let's get right into it. Number one here. Oh my gosh. Urban Meyer, what are you doing down in Jacksonville, Urban Meyer? This guy should just never go back to Florida, right? After everything that happened in Gainesville when he was at the University of Florida, and of course he blamed his exit from the university on mental health issues, but as you may or may not know, there were persistent rumors going around Florida, making their way around campus, that Mr. Meyer, Coach Meyer, if you don't know Urban Meyer, right, he's, of course, the coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars professional football team now and legendary college football coach at Utah, then at Florida, then at Ohio State. And his exit from Florida the first time, his second exit from the state of Florida is coming up soon, let me tell you. But his exit from Florida the first time, from Gainesville, from University of Florida, the Gators, the home of the Gators there, was rumored to be as a result of his indiscretions with undergraduate women attending the University of Florida. And his dalliances were not to the liking of his wife, Shelley. And that's the real reason, according to many people, that he left the University of Florida to begin with. Maybe true. You never know. Certainly he left under interesting conditions right after winning a couple of national championships there. But he said it was mental health, so maybe it was. Maybe it was. We do not know. Also interesting to note that during his tenure at University of Florida, Urban Meyer also harbored Aaron Hernandez, of course, the most famous National Football League murderer of all time. Well, that was his first trip down to Florida. Then he went up to Ohio State, went to Columbus, home of the Columbia Records Tower dorms. They have those circular dorms there. Look like some alien tripod cylinder legs that they put down on campus. And then the disc part of the alien ship just took off. It is some brutal architecture. Not quite brutalist, but very poor architecture on the state, on the campus there of Ohio State. And of course, while he was at Ohio State, Urban, much beloved because all they care about is winning there, but Urban did have a problem with his wide receivers coach, of course, right? One of the things that the wide receiver coach did was order a bunch of sex toys delivered to the football offices for his own use, I guess, in private, in his life, but they came to the football stadium. And then, of course, the wide receivers coach there was abusing his spouse, his wife. And you can argue one way, you can argue the other way, but Urban arguably protected the wide receiver coach. Certainly didn't investigate it as much as he could have and deal with it as much as he could have. That ultimately led to Urban leaving Ohio State. Took a year off again, probably for his mental health again. And where did he end up? He ended up in Florida. Now, again, Jacksonville. And did you see what happened to Urban now this week? Urban has some videos circulating of him and some unknown, I've seen people on Twitter calling her the blonde chick, some unknown blonde chick at the Urban Chop House in Columbus. First of all, it's very strange that Urban was even there. His team, Jacksonville Jaguars, are doing terribly in the current NFL season. And then Urban made the strange choice not to fly back to Florida with his team after their game in Ohio. He stayed in Columbus. That's unusual enough, not showing not to show team solidarity there. But then when he stayed, he lets pictures get taken of himself with this woman basically giving him a lap dance in the middle of the chop house. She's not exactly sitting on his lap while he's sitting down, but she is definitely leaning up against him. And Urban seems to be enjoying it. And as soon as this video came out and people started to talk about it, and there was this reaction, oh, this is not good. And then the counter reaction, well, you know, it was a bad example of judgment. Shouldn't have happened. Learned a lot from it. As soon as that reaction started to happen, then the second video came out. And most people are describing the second video as Urban putting his hand on the woman's rear end. I watch it to me, and it looks to me like it is a little bit more than that. I think he has his hand between her legs, at least for a moment there. It's hard to tell, but it's not good when you are a public figure, especially in the football world, because of the values and the traditional customs that hold sway in that world. This video is contrary to them, and certainly not respectful to his wife and to his marriage. So, Urban, I don't know what you were thinking, but going out there and getting caught like that is dumb, man. You are a public figure. That chop house has your name on it. It's the Urban Chop House. You know people are going to recognize you. Of course they will recognize you anywhere anyway. That's just foolish. And on top of your team doing poorly, to go out and behave like that and get yourself in more hot water, I don't know what you're thinking. You have found yourself a spot on the dumbest pop culture moment of the week. Richly deserved. Let's go on to number two, dumbest pop culture moment of the week. You knew it was coming, Dave Chappelle. That's right, he's out there on Netflix with a new comedy special, and he is supporting J.K. Rowling. In fact, Dave came out and said that, like J.K. Rowling, Harry Potter author, of course, Dave is Team TERF. Now, what does TERF mean? T-E-R-F. This is an acronym. It stands for Trans Exclusionary Radical Feminist. Basically, as Dave put it, he said, gender is a fact. Now, what's dumb, what's landing this on the dumbest pop culture moments of the week list, is not that Dave and JK are out there saying that gender is a fact and that biological sex does matter, and that there is a difference between a person who is born with XX chromosomes and a person who is born with XY chromosomes and all the accompanying physical genitalia. They're saying that there's a difference between a person born with one set of chromosomes, a person born with another set of chromosomes, versus a person who is born with, say, XY chromosomes that wants to behave as a person with XX chromosomes. That's not the dumb part. Obviously, they're right. That's just obvious that they are true. There is a difference. It's obvious that they are correct, I should say. There is a difference between those two sorts of people. No hate, as Rowling and Chappelle constantly say, too. No hate. Pointing out a difference is not any form of hatred. It is not any form of phobia. It is just acknowledging that there is a difference. It is being true to the science. Remember, folks, science is not about what you want to be true. It is not about what you wish to be true. It is not about what would be nice if it were true or would suit your narrative or your views or your goals if it were true. No, science is only about what is true. And it is true, undeniably, that there is a difference between people who are born with XX chromosomes and people who are born with XY chromosomes but want to live the part of a female. And that's fine. More power to them if they want to do that. but it is insanity. It is reality denying madness to say that there is no difference between them. So the dumb pop culture moment is not that Dave came out and said that. That's great that Dave came out and said that. We need more people on the side of reality. What's dumb is the reaction to it, right? You have people like Tara Field. She's a software engineer that's getting quoted all over the place, coming out and say that promoting TERF ideology directly harms trans people. Well, no, it does not. Directly harms? No, absolutely not. It may be true that it makes you uncomfortable, but that's not harm. And it may be true that it points out a flaw in your argument and you don't like that, but that is not harm. And word to the wise, if acknowledging reality is making you feel uncomfortable, then you should adjust, because reality is not going to adjust for you. The world does not care about you. The world is not monitoring you. You're not a player in a video game. The world is not going to say, oh, this person's not having a fun time, let me change the rules of the game. That's not how the world works. Our world doesn't care. You are 3 minutes away from dying at any point in your life. Stop breathing. You got 3 minutes, and the world doesn't care. Classic example I always use of this was that guy from Carleton College in Minnesota, and he was a physics student, and he went down about 15, 20 years ago on a study program to Puerto Rico, and he was a swell guy. Went to the Arecibo radio telescope there while it was still working, the great Golden Eye radio telescope there. This telescope is not a small thing, right? It's about the size of a football field, a giant concrete dish in the ground. And he was working on that, and then he decided, oh, I'm going to go explore the local terrain. And as he went off on his jaunt, he slipped, he fell into the river, he cracked his head, he went unconscious, he died. This was very sad. But the example here is that the world doesn't care that he was a great kid. The world doesn't care that he was studying physics, which is awesome. The world doesn't care that he was at the Golden Eye Arecibo telescope, which is awesome. The world doesn't care about that. You stop breathing for 3 minutes, you're dead. The world doesn't care what you want, Miss Field, to be true about trans people. The world doesn't care. It is true. Simple fact that there is a difference between having XX chromosomes and living as you see other people who have XX chromosomes living. There is a difference there, and if it hurts you to acknowledge that, that's on you. All right, so that's the second dumbest pop culture moment of the week. Now let's go on to the third dumbest pop culture moment of the week. This comes to us from Malcolm Gladwell. Right, Malcolm Gladwell has a blog post up about Norm MacDonald. And Gladwell's point is basically saying that what you would expect from an academic. He says, well, I really don't get Norm MacDonald. I don't think he's funny. I don't like him, but you really shouldn't listen to me. And then he goes on to have more, you know, 1,000 more words that he's saying, but we should listen to him about it. But he says, you shouldn't listen to me about Norm MacDonald, because Norm does comedy, and I, Malcolm Gladwell, I'm not a comedy insider, right? Now, this could be valid, right? Even though he said not to listen to him about comedy, it could be quite valid to listen to Gladwell about his broader point. That could absolutely be true. So these 1,000 words are not necessarily a waste, even though he just said, don't listen to me about comedy, because he's not a comedy insider. Unfortunately, it is kind of a waste to go on for these other 1,000 words. It's illustrative, I suppose, as a counterexample of what should be done when evaluating art. But that's all it's useful for. Because what happens here is that Gladwell is saying, you know, I'm not an expert on comedy, so you shouldn't trust what I say. You shouldn't trust your own judgment, even, if you are not an expert on comedy. You should only listen to the experts. You should disregard your own opinion on Norm Macdonald or on other comedians or on other art and only listen to the experts and just take your cues from them. This is, of course, exactly what you would think an expert would say. And then, of course, people are seizing this little blog post and they're running all around the internet saying, see, this is why modern art is actually great. Yes, it looks like paint splotches on the wall. Yes, it's just a big white blank canvas on the wall. Yes, it looks, as Dave Barry says, like a crashed helicopter smoldering on the ground that nobody forgot to clean up. But that you have no right to judge it because you're not an expert. You can't appreciate it. You don't have insider knowledge. Well, this is really, really super dumb because actually zillions of people do love Norm Macdonald. You're not going to find zillions of views for Anselmo's The Structure That Eats Salad out there on YouTube. But you are going to find zillions of views for Norm. Norm was awesome. He was on Saturday Night Live, for God's sakes. To hold him up as an example of why modern art is actually good is insane. To say, you know, Frank Gehry's Dr. Seuss building on MIT's campus that they had to spend millions and millions on to fix the leaks because it sucked so bad. To say that's actually a good building because insiders appreciate Norm Macdonald, that's beyond silly. That is foolish. Because Norm Macdonald was beloved by literally tens of millions of people. My kids are, I have two boys who are 5 and 7. They love Norm Macdonald. They think he's hilarious. It does not take any insider comedy knowledge to appreciate him. Norm Macdonald was Glumshanks on Skylanders, for goodness sakes. Come on, man, to say he's somehow appreciated by insiders and you have to be an insider to understand them and that's proof that modern art is good, that is silly. One of the examples Gladwell gives is Norm's famous appearance on Conan O'Brien where he tells the moth joke. Now, I'm sorry that Gladwell doesn't get that joke. I really wish he did. He would have a better life if he got it. But that joke is freaking hilarious. All right. And I am not a comedy insider. I am not somebody who goes to comedy clubs. I think I've been to maybe 3 comedy clubs in my life. Right. I don't study comedy. I don't do stand up comedy. And I really don't watch Conan O'Brien or most of the other late night shows with any sort of regularity. I haven't studied them to give me any sort of knowledge that is beyond a layperson. But I watched Norm with that moth man joke going to the podiatrist and talking about existential angst. This is hilarious. And it's not just the punchline. Gladwell seems to think it's just about the punchline. No, it's a moth talking to a podiatrist about his daughter going through all these troubles and lying in bed with a beautiful wife under his arm on one side and a gun on the other side and his son who just can't find meaning in life. And that's a moth talking about it to a podiatrist. And he tells it really well. It's funny. So this is really the number one dumbest pop culture moment of the week, saying that Norm Macdonald being appreciated by insiders is evidence for the value of modern art. Now, to be clear, Gladwell just said that it's evidence for the fact that we should listen to experts and insiders and take our cues from them rather than listening to our own opinions. He didn't quite go so far as to say that justifies burning helicopter sculptures and blank wall canvases and, you know, pigment vomit on a canvas as a painting. But everybody else in the Twitterverse and other places are supporting that idea. All right, let's keep going on. Number 4, dumbest pop culture moment of the week here. We have Afghanistan. And the Taliban has taken away all music, or almost all music, certainly most instrumental music. It's not allowed on the radio. Instead, they have replaced their pop culture music. They had tons of Indian pop songs. And according to the Wall Street Journal, you can still hear Indian pop songs like coming out of the windows of cars driving through Kabul. But on the radios, television, etc., you do not see pop music anymore. You hear taranas, which are these a cappella songs that simply extol the virtues of jihad, right? Again, per the Wall Street Journal, they quote one tarana which has stolen a melody from a Pashto pop hit, but instead replaced the original lyrics with, "I'm a fighter, I'm a Talib, I will finish off America. Yes, you, the West, you won't be spared." Yeah, so that's pretty dumb for the Taliban to be doing that. And this one isn't funny, I'm sorry. Usually this space has a little bit of humor to it. But no, that one is just dumb, not too funny. Next, number 5, Adele's weight loss. Two dumb things here. One is that people are actually bashing her for losing weight, right? I just pulled this quote. I think this was some poster on Quora. She said, "Adele was a poster woman for plus-size people, and it is sad to lose that." Yeah, okay. And other people are complaining that that Adele has betrayed them, that she has left them, she has abandoned them. You know, Adele wasn't yours to begin with. You didn't have any claim on her. That's just silly. Some people are saying, well, yeah, I'm a little disappointed that she's not plus-sized anymore, and she's not representing how great it is to be fat anymore. But what really I'm upset about is the shock, because she didn't tell us. And this is coming out of nowhere. And that's just dumb. It hasn't come out of nowhere. Just a year ago, Adele was in trouble for, remember, she wore that Jamaican flag bikini and she had her hair in Bantu knots, and everybody was accusing her of cultural appropriation, right? She was really thin in that picture. Certainly much thinner than she used to have been. So I'm not buying the shock excuse either. I will say that it's not quite as big an outcry as some people make it out to be. The real problem here beyond that is that some people are bashing other people for even talking about Adele's weight and saying you should never talk about somebody's weight. No, give me a break. She's a pop star. She's putting that herself out there. If she didn't want us to talk about her weight, she could have stayed like she'd been for the last 2 or 3 years and not release a new album. And she has plenty of other choices she can do with her life. When you are a pop star, people will discuss whether you're fat or you're skinny. That's just the way it goes. But on the other hand, you know, if the shortages continue, and they probably will, sooner or later we're going to get to food and then we'll all be Adeles. Yes, I know. All right, let's go to the number 6. We're getting some bonus ones here. I guess there's a lot of dumb pop culture out there this week. Number 6, you have Meghan Trainor, and she's the singer from All About That Bass, and hubby Daryl Sabara from Spy Kids. They have his and hers toilets in the same room. Her excuse for this is that a lot of times in the middle of the night when we're with the baby, we got to pee at the same time. So I was like, can we please have two toilets right next to each other? No. I've raised kids, and peeing together with my wife, that would not help. But on the other hand, you know, if that's how Meghan and Daryl are going to approach life and that's working for them, good for them. Go for it. But for me, that would be pretty dumb to have two toilets right next to each other. I frankly can't even imagine it, but I guess it speaks to the diversity of human experience, right? First contact. Whenever you meet somebody, you should assume that they are an alien. Every time you meet somebody, that is first contact right there. Just assume they're an alien and assume nothing is common between you and the person that you meet. That's how you should meet people, because I'm out here thinking that twin toilets matched up is a horrible idea, but Meghan and Daryl out there loving life on the his and hers toilets. So there you go. Whenever you meet somebody, never assume that they're the type of person who would not like joining toilets. Their brother, Megan's brother, says that they poop together on them. All right, let's go on to number seven. Let's go on to number seven. The Outback Wrangler star, Matt Wright, he's got a video up showing his two-year-old playing with a giant snake. Matt, did you not learn anything from Crocodile Hunter? Did you not learn anything? Wild animals are dangerous. This is dumb. Don't use your two-year-old as clickbait or snake bait. And also in that video, he like pretends it bit him and he's trying to scare the kid, or he does scare the kid. No, not okay. All right. We're going to finish up here today with a smart pop culture moment of the week. This is Tiffany Amber Thiessen, and she honored the 27th wedding anniversary of Zach and Kelly. You love to see it. You absolutely love to see it. What made Saved by the Bell so great, by the way, one thing, it was a Degrassi clone, just like Beverly Hills 90210. And the second thing is, people don't realize it, but kids were making their own art that looked like Saved by the Bell. People say, oh, the terrible quality of Degrassi Junior High, the terrible quality, the production value is terrible of Saved by the Bell. I mean, they weren't that bad, but you know what? Kids were making their own videos at this point. They were recording their own home videos already, and they saw Degrassi, they saw Saved by the Bell, and it looked way closer to what they were doing in their own art at home than other shows on television looked. And that was a big key to Degrassi and its follow-on's success. 90210 had tremendous production values, of course, because he had the spellings. But speaking of Saved by the Bell and Degrassi Junior High, those low production values really worked in their favor because they were relatable. And people often gloss over how important this new method of relating to art was. We had an explosion of artists in the second half of the 20th century for a lot of different reasons. Art just became more and more pervasive throughout our lives, and not just art that was consumed, but art that was produced. There were more artists, and that allowed people to relate to art through their own art. And that is not a phenomenon that had a whole lot of precedent in the Western tradition. Maybe we should do a whole podcast on that. Sometime we will. All right, let's end today with a poem for this weekend. This is Robert Service's The Squaw Man. Robert Service, of course, became very rich writing his Yukon poems, even though he had to come across the Atlantic from Scotland, I believe, to get to the North American continent and find his genius, not to say his genius loci, up there in the Yukon. Robert Service, of course, writing at the beginning of the 20th century. Interesting to contrast and compare what he was doing then with his popular poetry to, say, Ezra Pound, writing in the Egoist Journal and Poetry Magazine, and other poets like that. And, of course, to throw in Robert Frost. As they say, Robert Frost had nothing to do with modern poetry except that he was a great modern poet. So, here we go. Robert Service, The Squaw Man. The cow moose comes to water, and the beaver's overbold. The net is in the eddy of the stream. The teepee stars the vivid sward with russet, red and gold. And in the velvet gloom the fire's agleam. The night is ripe with quiet, rich with incense of the pine. From Sanctuary Lake I hear the loon. The peaks are bright against the blue and drenched with sunset wine. And like a silver bubble is the moon. Cloud high I climbed but yesterday. 100 miles around I looked to see a rival fire agleam. As in a crystal lens it lay, a land without a bound, all lure and virgin vastitude and dream. The great sky soared exultantly, the great earth bared its breast, all river-veined and patterned with the pine. The heedless hordes of caribou were streaming to the west, a land of lustrous mystery, and mine, yeah, mine to frame my odyssey. Oh, little do they know my conquest in the kingdom that I keep, the meadows of the muskox where the laughing grasses grow, the rivers where the careless conies leap, beyond the silent circle where white men are fierce and few, I lord it, and I mock at man-made law. Like a flame upon the water is my little light canoe, and yonder in the fire glow is my squaw. A squaw man, yes, that's what I am. Sneer at me if you will. I've gone the grilling pace that cannot last with bawdry bridge and brandy. Oh, I've drank enough to kill a dozen such as you, but that is past. I've swung round to my senses, found the place where I belong. The city made a madman out of me, but here beyond the circle, where there's neither right nor wrong, I leap from life's straitjacket, and I'm free. Yet ever in the far forlorn by trails of lone desire, yet ever in the dawn's white leer of hate, yet ever by the dripping kill, beside the drowsy fire, there comes the fierce heart hunger for a mate. There comes the mad blood clamor for a woman's clinging hand, love-humid eyes, the velvet of a breast. And so I sought the bonnet plumes and chose from out the band the girl I thought the sweetest and the best. Oh, wistful women I have loved before my dark disgrace. Oh, women fair and rare in my homeland. Dear ladies, if I saw you now, I'd turn away my face, then crawl to kiss your footprints in the sand. And yet, that day the rifle jammed, a wounded moose at bay, a roar, a charge, I faced it with my knife, a shot from out the willow scrub, and there the monster lay. Yes, little laughing eyes, you saved my life. The man must have the woman, and we're all brutes, more or less. Since first the male ape shinned the family tree, and yet I think I love her with a husband's tenderness, and yet I know that she would die for me. Oh, if I left you, laughing eyes, and nevermore came back, God help you, girl, I know what you would do. I see the lake wan in the moon, and from the shadow black there drifts a little empty birch canoe. We're here beyond the circle, where there's never wrong nor right. We aren't spliced according to the law, but by the gods I hail you on this hushed and holy night as the mother of my children and my squaw. I see your little slender face set in the firelight glow. I pray that I may never make it sad. I hear you croon a baby song, all slumber soft and low. God bless you, little laughing eyes. I'm glad. Take care, folks. Have a great weekend.